area and will benefit those attempting to legally immigrate to the U.S. The event will host raffles, food and drink, and music and comedy performances. Again, that's Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Black Lives Masquerade on Sunday, November 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library in Portland. Black Lives Masquerade is a dance-style documentary of the Community Engagement Project by the same name, which looks to reflect on taking back traditional ceremonies in current times, the process of healing in the Black community, and bringing awareness to police brutality, gun violence, and racial justice. Again, that's Black Lives Masquerade on Sunday, November 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it get funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat, and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what? I won't hesitate to diss one or two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well I'm dropping English, even if Yella makes it a cappella. I still express yo, I don't smoke weed or sex, cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself, do it, do. Spread yourself, do it, do. Ice Cube, it's not for the pop chart, so where should a brother like you start expressing yourself, my boy, and show you how your track?
What up?
Drop English right about now. Getting back to the PG, that's program, and it's easy. Dre is back, new jacks are made hollow. Expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend. The records I spin again and again and again. Yo, you're on the other end. Watch a brother blend dope rhymes with no help. There's no fessing or guessing while I'm expressing myself. It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go, they know. Others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Though some musicians, cause at home, they're scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show, they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to
spread yourself.
My sacrifice, I'm done waiting, I'm done waiting. Told you that I wasn't playing, now you hear what I've been saying. Dedication, 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 dedication.
Yes, yes, what's happening? It's the Wonderful Calculated Conversation Show, and we are back. I'm your host, David Jefferson.
And I'm Cam Jones.
And we got a special guest back in the house for a second installment, Giovanni Shern, the great, the great Giovanni Shern. Oh,
Giovanni the great.
The inspirational Giovanni Shern.
Yes, how are you?
I am great. I'm doing good.
That's dope.
I'm doing really good.
Your hair popping, them curls out there.
Hey, I washed it today for y'all.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Do you just tell people you're doing good, or are you always doing good? Because I've never heard you say you're doing bad as long as I've known you.
You know what? I think the fact that I'm alive and breathing, okay, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And Facebook helps remind me I'm doing good.
That's right.
I mean, you know, you see a lot of health issues and missing kids, and you know, just so much to be thankful for. Yeah. So I am doing good.
Yeah, subs. No, I'm kidding. But that's cool. We glad to have you back. This is the second time you've been here. The last show, I believe, was just over a year ago.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a cool little anniversary and stuff like that. But
where's the cake?
It's at the refrigerator.
I actually do got a little bundt cake. A little, what is it?
The yellow one?
Nah, red velvet joint.
Oh, nice.
A little place out here. It's a hit.
All right.
Okay.
We'll be splitting that up soon.
Three ways.
But, you know, we do know that you are the founder of Up and Over, and we talked about that on the last show, so we don't have to go too much into that. But
righteous.
Might want to touch on in case we got new listeners. It has been 12 months. But, you know, you also are very active in the spreading of awareness of mental health. Right?
Yes.
And if I'm correct, we are right smack in Mental Health Awareness Month. Am I right?
You are.
What is your role in this whole movement? And how did you get involved, and why are you involved? And, you know, a little bit of background.
Yeah. So Up and Over, you know, started 2011. We went to high schools, middle schools. You've been a part of it. You've come out and filmed for us. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to share with young people that they can get up and over their obstacles. And that over time evolved into other things, workshops, presentations. And that kind of took a lot of my time. And then 2 years ago, my son was released from the Oregon State Hospital. So after being diagnosed with schizophrenia. And so that kind of started my walk into mental health advocacy, especially for parents. Hmm. And one thing that I noticed, too, is a lot of people have this idea about schizophrenia and mental health, and it's usually based off of, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, mm-hmm, or something that they saw on Law and Order, and I was one of those people. And so until it actually hit me and I had to deal with it, I also applied a stigma to mental health.
Right.
So I understand. It doesn't upset me like it does a lot of other people that there's a stigma around mental health and mental illness, because I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I only knew what I knew until it directly affected me. So
so you see both sides.
I do. And I can appreciate both sides, because, like I said, I was one on that other side. And I don't know if I would have been so actively involved in mental health advocacy now had my son been diagnosed with schizophrenia. So. But that's usually how it is. You know, someone starts an organization because they've been directly affected by that, or they know someone who's been affected by that. So,
which helps you be a little bit more empathetic with people who have not been affected yet, and you can see why they're completely unaware of the extent of the illness, right?
Yep.
I mean, personally, like, this ain't the first time I said it on the show, but I feel like we kind of grow up that way. You know, every time I think of mental health, even I start to feel a little guilty, just because I know how we were raised in our community, and, you know, we just kind of pretty much made jokes of anybody that displayed an illness, and just kind of dubbing them as crazy, and running on and making it a laugh.
Yeah.
And even nowadays, you know, most of the fiascos on social media that are being filmed are typically people that are mentally ill.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole country is finding that funny.
Yeah.
You know, without understanding the extent of the impact on people's lives would actually affect.
Right.
So I appreciate having you here, because I definitely like to learn more about it too, because, you know, I mean, I see it all the time, and now I feel like I'm more aware of it now. Now I'm more patient. Ever since I've been, you know, learning more about it, I've been noticing some of the symptoms, and I've been being a little bit more patient, a little bit more empathetic,
right,
and a little bit more helpful.
I think too, you think of media, specifically from cartoons, movies, sitcoms, whatever. The crazy person, right, that's suffering from whatever. It's always somebody breaking out of a mental illness or a mental health institution, and terrorizing or doing something, some kind of wacky antics, right? So it's this part that kind of gets thrown in a lot of places as either comic relief or stay far away, right?
Right.
And so that's what we're being conditioned to and have been conditioned to for so long. And then when it becomes real for us, as far as dealing with somebody in our family or just a close friend or something, then it's like, oh, yikes, this isn't what I thought it was.
It isn't funny no more.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, I'll tell you, when I was, looking for my son, there were two, so he was released from the state hospital, and they didn't tell me, right? He's a grown man. We're not going to tell you, hey, your son is headed back to the jail.
Right.
And so I didn't find out until 2 weeks later, but I looked for him for 2 weeks by myself because of that stigma of mental illness, because I didn't know how to tell people my son has a mental illness.
Right.
And so I'm going to look for him myself. And then, of course, that's impossible for one person to look for someone who's homeless and all over the place. And so I had to go to social media and say, hey, you know, I gave my long old speech about it, but ended it with, don't ask me no questions.
Right.
I don't know the answers. What I do know is I need to find my son. And once I started doing that, there were so many people that were in my inbox. And this kind of goes back to like you saying, unless you're involved with it or you know somebody.
Right.
There are people that I have been friends with forever in my inbox. My brother was diagnosed. My mother was diagnosed. My sister was diagnosed.
Right.
I have bipolar. I mean, people just started feeling more comfortable saying, you know, this is part of my family too. And I was shocked at how many people, if not directly in your family, that you knew somebody that had a mental health condition.
Right.
And mental health, I mean, there's 300 like medical, you know, mental health diagnosis.
I was just about to ask you that. How many really?
There's about 300, but you know, the ones we mostly hear about is bipolar, depression, schizophrenia, you know, PTSD, those types of things, antisocial personality disorders.
Yeah.
Those are the things we hear the most about, but there's like this big long list of mental health conditions. And I think just here recently, people even started considering depression a mental health condition. So I was just talking to my cousin last night, and we're both, you know, strong black women, which can be damaging in itself, just to wear that label, because then you have this, I have to live up to that.
Yep.
So I have to be strong. But strong doesn't mean that you don't hurt, that you don't you know, have fears and worries and feel depression at times. And I think when people think about depression, they think all the lights are off, you know, I'm in the corner, I'm not talking to nobody, you know, I'm this close to ending my life. And that's not the only face of depression.
Right.
You know, depression,
many stages.
There are a lot of people who function with depression.
Right.
You know, and we were also saying that I think everybody could benefit from a couple sessions of therapy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with that fully. I remember, I think years back, I think about a conversation I was having before, because I've known a few people that talked about depression and, you know, them saying going through a depressing time. And I feel like I used to always, when I would hear that from certain people, I'd be like, are you just, is that a word that you're just using? And I would write it off, because I've been asked, are you depressed? And I was like, no, like I've been mad about something or, you know, in a space, but never through the label, because I've always been scared with that type of stuff to throw a label and then feel like now I'm going to start seeking, you know, or not seeking, but falling kind of in line with that.
Yeah.
And so I've made sure to never use that in terms of whatever it is that I'm dealing with. But I do understand that this is a real thing. Right. Yeah. But that came later.
Yeah, because that's you acting in the stigma of that label.
Right, right.
I don't want to put that on myself because right. then I don't want to start carrying myself as a depressed person.
Right.
But if you understood what depressed right. what a depressed person looks like, it's not just this one
yep.
this one thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that was an understanding. And of course coming into more recent where you gotta understand that people handle their scandals differently. You know?
Right.
And the idea of the high functioning, you know, there's high functioning drug addicts that right. show up at work and do all the stuff and then go home and tweet. And it works for them, right?
Right.
We're used to this idea and image of what a drug user or whatever
yes.
is, right?
Right?
We're used to this idea of what we know with depression, schizophrenia, mm-hmm. all these different things, what we've been put out that are the extreme versions, right. but there are people operating.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest, I think the big thing is being able to talk with somebody that actually knows something about it. And most of us have not been groomed to go and ask anybody anything mm-hmm. about ourselves.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's it's ourselves. Like, we can go and talk about a friend. We can go talk about our child. We can go talk about but it's us when it comes in that we may see some things or people may have pointed some things out, but a lot of us don't want to accept that it could be us.
It's hard to look in the mirror.
Right.
Oh, it yeah. really is. Yeah. And I've told people in the past that have come to me for, you know, there was a time that I would just, I'm going to offer advice. Now I don't do that unless people come and ask.
Right, right.
Not everybody wants to know what I think.
right,
so,
right.
you know, when people do ask, you know, how do you find that balance? It's, even if it's just you in the mirror saying, and sometimes it's hard, you know, I'm a liar, I'm a cheater, right. I'm a manipulator, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a judgmental person. Like, just yes. owning those yeah. things, mm-hmm. and then you can figure out how do I become more than that? How right. do I overcome those things? But right. you got to acknowledge it before you can deal with it. And I think you're right, like going to therapy. Some people think, you know, going to therapy, that means I have a person that's going to just listen to me talk, and I love to talk about myself. But right. if you're not honest, then you're not going to get the full benefits.
Because right,
I think a therapist helps us understand and kind of sort through our thoughts, but also why we are the way we
right,
are.
Yeah.
And that's at the root of everything, why
yes.
we are the way we are. And a lot of people don't want to accept that, well, I'm the way I am because,
right.
you know, my mom wasn't there, my dad wasn't there, or this happened in my childhood, mm-hmm. or I had this trauma happen. It affects us. I have people tell me all the time, well, you know, I didn't know my dad, so I don't really care. And I was one of those people.
Yeah.
And until I went to my dad's funeral, who I didn't know, and saw all these pictures of him with his wife's kids, like this young man that I didn't even know him. And uh-huh. so I didn't even realize until I saw that how affected I was by Ooh. My dad not being that in my life.
Cool.
So I didn't mourn the man because I didn't know him. But right. I found myself just overcome with emotion because I mourned what I didn't have,
right.
but I didn't know I needed it until it wasn't there. So
right.
I understand now, like even with my relationships and all that, how that not having my father in my life affected that.
Mm.
And so I think when you go to counseling, if you're not honest about your mess,
right.
then you're not really going to get the full benefit of that. But I think everybody can benefit from it.
Yeah, I feel like we live in this this space, this world, this kind of society that makes you feel guilty for not being perfect,
mm.
you know? And so people like to, you know, display perfection, you know, on
yeah.
felonious levels, you know, and, you know, social media is a big, you know, big representation of that.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's like a big part of us getting to the next step is making it okay to be imperfect.
To be human.
You know, to be human. Yeah, like, I mean, because everybody's flawed, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think understanding your imperfections is the best segue you can possibly have to growth and awareness.
Yeah.
Because it's a great start. Like, it lets you know, okay, so I got work I can do.
Right.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't know you got no work to do as long as you don't have to say I didn't do nothing wrong.
Right.
Right.
Or it's not me, or that's their problem.
And you got to be willing to do the work.
Yeah.
That's the other
And it's thing. Hard work because you got to unlearn a lot of things that you were raised to believe, you know,
yeah.
on a subconscious level.
Yeah.
And you got to challenge all that, you know.
You have to be take accountability. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a hard thing for grown folks to do, is be accountable for their current behavior, but also, you know, what got me here.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, maybe I did have a rough childhood, but at some point I'm making decisions,
yeah,
and they are contributing to where I am now. So I have to be accountable for that. You know, and like you said, just being cool with me. I should get that on a t-shirt, because that's what I tell people. I'm cool with me. Like, I'm cool with being a mom. I'm cool. Now, it took me a long time to get there, because we are not really valued for who we are as people. We're more, like you said, looked at for what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I felt like I had to be busy all the time to be considered valuable. And y'all know I take naps. I do what I do, and I'm cool with that, because being a mom is important.
Yes.
Helping in the community, volunteering, that is important.
Yes.
So, you know, just valuing yourself and what you contribute is tough to get to because of social media. Because mm-hmm. we, you know, you see someone, you know, oh, this 12-year-old is a doctor, and you know, yeah, this 3-year-old has cured cancer, and you're like, I just woke up from a nap and ate a box of Twinkies, so hey, I didn't, what did I do today? But we do, you know, we have to learn to value
the box of Twinkies.
Oh man, I'll tear them up. But we have to learn to value ourselves, to trust ourselves, and then be cool with who we are as people, and accept that we're growing all the time, you
ever
know,
evolving.
Yeah, all the time. So
I think something too earlier that you had touched on was like with going to therapy and having to open up, right? Mm. And actually give the real story,
the truth.
Right, the truth. And thinking of how many things that people, like the idea of like hypnotherapy and all that, it's if you can't let go essentially, mm-hmm. and you're trying to keep holding that control over it, then it's not going to be effective. I think some people are just naturally more susceptible to certain things, and they're able to release and let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is those people that are naturally lean that way definitely get the benefits off the rip. And I think it's people who go in and have that still that wall up, because this is a stranger, and we've been taught so long, you don't tell your business.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Like, nobody's supposed to know your business like that. Your family business is family business, right? That type of stuff.
No matter how much it destroys you.
Right.
Hold it in.
Yeah,
right.
Hold it in.
But at least, you know, getting to the point where we're at now, where these conversations are being had on the platforms that are making it, making people more aware, and it becoming more normalized.
Right.
And taking away the taboo that's been there for however long,
yeah,
since forever. Right?
Right.
And just being able to push, not just for like us getting older, but this to be normal for the youth.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's where it really
yes.
hits.
Yes.
Is to have them start processing and understanding, which, I mean, it could be just the type of stuff I look at and I come across, but I feel like I see it a lot more. I see a lot more kids really pushing a line for things that have to do with what's actually going on behind closed doors, mm-hmm. what they're dealing
yeah.
with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, oh, that's a part of being a teenager. Or
right.
Right. Right. And society, or I should say the professional industry is catching up to the need.
Yes.
You know, back in the day, you go see somebody, you get some pills, you know, and even they had these biases towards people,
yep. mm-hmm.
And we're quick to label people as crazy or whatever. And I think now with everybody, not just us that need to seek some support, but those that are given the support are more educated mm-hmm. on what that really looks like and how deep it really goes. You know, it's cool to see young people coming forward, but when they are not received, that causes a lot of damage as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if I confess, or I feel comfortable enough saying, you know, hey, some things are going on at home,
right.
And then it's not received well, it teaches our young people that your voice doesn't matter.
Hey.
So not just teaching them that not to speak, but it kind of embeds something in them as they grow up that your voice doesn't matter.
Yep.
And so as adults, it's really tough for them to have a voice, to express themselves, to have good relationships,
right.
to be good parents, to be all those things if they're not valued from the beginning.
Right.
So, like, I think that's I'm saying all that to say that the professionals, the profession has caught up to the need as well. So I think that's also aiding the fact that young people are feeling more comfortable because it's received differently than it was.
Got it.
In, you know, our day, my day. I think I'm older than y'all, but
yeah, we definitely slightly seeing some growth, I think, you know, and just more self awareness. There's a lot of programs going on. I'm seeing a lot more events. You know, I'm seeing health walks.
Even the curriculum in school, the high schools.
Oh, because your daughter's showing you some stuff. Like,
yeah, and just being a part. I mean, from elementary, middle school, the topics come up. And
oh, okay, good.
They do papers on them. They do research. Stuff in the hallways that are up on the walls. It's not just a suicide hotline. They got a lot more stuff up on the
walls. That's new.
It's not there. Yeah.
That's new.
Encouragement.
Yes.
You know, valuing people. I think I said last time that, you know, it's sad that our young people get all this negative stuff thrown at them, but our job as a community is to make sure they don't believe that.
Amen.
Like, you have to be able to take what you need and, you know, disregard what's not going to be valuable. But young kids don't have that skill. There are adults that don't have that, don't have that skill to be like, no, again, I'm cool with me. I appreciate what you're saying, but that's not true what you're saying about me. And so it's important to value young people's voice. And so, you know, we talk about the schools. That's a whole nother, whole nother show. But they're trying, you know, they're making strides, they're trying to acknowledge young people, but they still have a long way to go to value their voices. I'll just leave it at that.
Hey, so part three coming soon.
Part three, this won't be it. There's more. Look for us next year about this time.
But I'll be expecting some cake.
I'll make sure there's a cake. There's cake next time.
That'd be a like 2 year anniversary cake.
So a double layer.
Fudge, chocolate fudge.
What?
Oh my lord! Yes.
Jeez,
I think that
tooth hurting.
But you know, now that they're putting it into the schools, I think that might provide a much needed, you know, conversation. Because I feel like the goal should be to, you know, because I feel like the generation, like the older generation, just started being aware of this. So now I feel like it's starting to trickle down to the schools and to the kids. And so we kind of, if we can get a process like this, a thought, like a mindfulness like this started that early.
Right.
Like, I feel like, think how amazing like we could be as just as a society, you know, like if we can start earlier instead of waiting until we get, you know, like our latter adult years and then like, oh, okay, well, this is important now.
That's the, the key. I mean, at my age, I look at folks that are like late 20s, early 30s, and that are becoming mindful and becoming more aware. And I'm like, dang, I'm so impressed that at your age, you are getting it. When I had, you know, it took me this long to get to the point and an experience with my son and my kids to kind of get to the point where I'm being more aware. So to see young people coming up like that is great. And all of that said, this might be a good time for a couple little stats. Let's get some numbers in here.
Some numbers.
You know, it's one thing to be like, yes, this is great. But if we are doing everything that we should be doing, then teen suicide should not be going up. They should be coming down. And statistically, they are going up. And so what are we missing? What are we not doing? How are we not offering these young people support, whether it's in the school or the home or whatever, wherever it needs to come from? Like, where is it coming? Where is it supposed to come from? And how can we change those stats? So it's one thing to talk a good talk and this sounds all great and the schools are doing this, but the stats don't reflect that things are going down. And I think Oregon, I just read something that our Oregon school system, they're like, are they last? Or they're like way low on their state testing.
I've heard that too.
I mean, again, that's a whole other conversation, but you got 20,000 after school programs, but we're still getting worse and worse and worse. So, who is going to stop and take a look at that? So I'm just going to throw out a couple things. 13% of children ages 8 to 15 experience a mental health condition. Jeez. 13 to 20% of children living in the U.S., which is one out of five, experience a mental health condition in any given year. 50% of children ages 8 to 15 experience a mental health condition and do not receive treatment.
Jeez.
That's a lot. 17% of high school students seriously consider suicide. And half of all lifetime cases of mental illness begins by the age of 14. So... like you guys are saying, like waiting until we're adults to be like, oh man, I might need some support, I might need some help, or you know, it's the person on the street who's having a psychotic break, and yeah. then they finally get help that's not really help, is late. You know, we should really be focusing on middle school kids and their mental health right. and their mental wellness.
Right.
And when you think about that, it's not okay. Are you depressed? Are you suicidal? Is there some tendency of schizophrenia or bipolar? We're talking about before that.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
Not saying that, you know, schizophrenia and bipolar can be stopped.
Right.
You know, some of those illnesses you're predisposed to. But depression, that could be a chemical imbalance. It could be triggered by something. So how do we teach young people to recognize those things? That's what's
right.
important.
Yeah,
if we can't say, okay, we're going to get rid of, you know, if we intervene quick enough, these young people won't feel depressed. Okay. Well, I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
But what we can do is teach them how to recognize that in themselves and right. seek help from the beginning.
Yes.
Until they, or not until, but before they get to the point where they feel hopeless and they're standing on a bridge somewhere. Mm. You know, so we want to, what I would like to see is schools really focusing on a full, kind of all rounded wellness, you know, mind, heart, spirit,
absolutely.
All that, physical, yeah. At a young age, and not just, oh, we don't want you to commit suicide or go bully somebody.
Yeah.
No, we want you to be a healthy, well-rounded individual person.
Right.
Period.
I wrote a paper on this at PSU about that. Same thing of starting, this is a part of the curriculum. You got math, science, and so on, and having one just of understanding self, really going into these
yeah.
things.
Yeah, it's weird that they don't do that.
You would think, and I mean, I feel like what I honestly feel in my heart is that with the generation coming up behind us, and then the generation following that, the teachers that come in are going to start doing things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think some of the old ways that when we were being trained to go out into the world and work in a warehouse,
right.
that model is shifting. And it's going to take some of the people who come up with this being in front of them all the time.
Right,
before
right.
we had Crusaders who actually did the research and looked into it, but now it's out here for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think more people are going to start taking advantage of that. At least that's my feeling.
And I grew up in a time where you went to school to get a job.
Yeah.
And if sometime during high school you fell behind, I mean, you're a young person already feeling like a failure because
right, right.
if you don't graduate high school, you can't get a job. If you don't get a job, you ain't gonna be nothing.
Right.
So you're talking to a young person, 15, 16, 17 years old, struggling in high school who already feels like a failure before their life really even has gotten started. So, I mean, those types of mindsets and agendas that we're pushing can be damaging too. Mm-hmm. You know, just... I mean, everything we do and been through affects us, you
right.
know, from eat all the food on your plate causing, you
right,
know,
right.
issues to there are kids in Africa starving. You don't waste no food. Now you got people that you gonna eat that because they don't want you to waste no
right.
food. I mean, all that stuff affects us. So just imagine you're a young person and you're already 4 credits behind. You ain't gonna graduate with your friends. So what do? You just drop out of school because that's easier than to be starting your life being told by the system that you're a failure. That's pretty devastating for a person.
And think of what the flip of that would do, though.
Right.
Encouragement, you know,
right.
really highlighting your individual uniqueness, talent, skills, and so on. Being able to recognize your emotions, feel your emotions,
right.
know how to process your emotions, and
yeah.
that done through that whole time period.
Right. Right.
I honestly feel when I keep hearing these stories, man, I think about my childhood, you know, and just a lot of people I know and how we grew up. It's like, you know, like the generation had the right intentions, you know, but their methods was just kind of really, really outdated and unhealthy because they taught us to hide. They want us to fix things, which was not a bad idea, but they wanted to fix them by hiding them, you know, and not talking about them, you know. And as you grow up young, you know, like you said, like your parents is like, just do this. Why? Well, because I said so.
Right.
No education.
That part.
No real education, though.
But that's telling you,
you know,
what you have to say doesn't matter. Like, you don't matter.
Right.
I don't need, you're not valuable enough for me to even explain myself to. Like, you don't matter. And you learn that at a young age.
Yeah. And you learn, and then and we learn not to talk about the things that bothers us, that don't make sense to us, you know, because it's, don't worry about it, just do it because I said so, because the government says so,
right,
because Uncle Sam said so, because the police said so,
right,
you know, because your uncle said so, because right, the law said so,
right,
like no real reason, no understanding, no education. And then you got people growing up as rebels,
right?
Well,
right,
there's no reason why I can't do that, so I want to see. You know, unless there's like really like acute education and awareness on the calculations of these actions and the results of them, it's going to be hard to actually learn anything useful to become an adult and they make the right decisions when you get older.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm really against the fact that, you know, a lot of parents, I feel like, grew up thinking that the best thing to do is to hide information as if it wasn't going to come up outside the house somewhere.
And not thinking about how it's affecting kids, whether it's abuse or
they said it was done to me. I grew up fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's a
look at me.
That's a pathology. So it's like, well, this is how I was raised, and I'm fine. But are you though?
Right.
Because you've been married 3 times. You've been in abusive relationships. You know, you have kids by, you know, different. Are you fine though? Are you balanced?
You moved 13 times in the last year.
Right. Hey. So it's like, we don't look at the bigger picture, you know. And people think, even for me, you know, like I have it all together. But talking to my cousin last night and how we were raised, it's like, wow, that's really sad, you know. But back then, you know, we have these fond memories of growing up, and then you're like, oh, that's not a good thing. That's not a good situation to have a child in. That's not a good way to deal with, you know, trauma and stuff in the family. So it's it takes some, like you said, unlearning. But the parents, the grown folks, have to be willing to take the first step.
Yes.
You know, there are parents out here now that, you know, yell and scream at their kids, and because that's what happened
tradition.
To them.
Tradition.
And like you said, they're okay. But then at the same time, I don't say it to them because they're not asking me, but I just be like, are you though?
Right.
Are you though?
But you can tell when somebody's not okay, because like, saying one thing and your energy spilling all the reality of it is two different things. You can, a person doesn't even have to speak for you to know they're not happy.
Right.
You know, there's a certain aura around you that you carry when you're happy, and when that you carry when you're completely confused about who you are and what you're doing here
and your behavior.
But you're not supposed to talk about it.
Right. But it's like, we can't hide very long who we really are. Eventually, that's going to come out either in what we say or what we do. And so, if we're not talkers, our actions will show that. And, you know, I'm not saying that everybody needs to run around analyzing everybody and like, oh, well, she had 10 drinks. She must have been, you know, let's talk about it. No, that's not our job to run around analyzing and you know, prescribing pills and stuff for people. But we can be compassionate to the fact that I don't know that person's story.
And
there's more to it. And so before I jump to conclusions or I start cussing and yelling and screaming and cussing somebody out, first of all, I need to make sure that I'm in character for myself. Do I respect myself enough not to act a fool like that and be yelling and cussing at folks? I got to get myself together to where I can communicate better. But who asked me? You know, it's like nobody really is out there asking me to, you know, point out people who I think need or have issues. But what I can do is be aware of that, right? Is be aware of who I am and be aware that people have traumas. People have lives, you know, events that have happened that I will never, maybe never be aware of. But I gotta, mm-hmm. I gotta credit their experience. You know, I can't, right. or I can't discredit it. So,
but let me ask you a question: is it okay to? I mean, is it possible to like understand and empathize where they are, but still keep them the heck away from you?
No, I think that's healthy.
Like, because sometimes you know, people think that they take that as a judgment. It's like, no, I'm not upset at you, and I understand, but I can't have it in my life still.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? I think that's where people get it confused, and it's like, because I don't want to deal with certain things. You know what I'm saying? And I like immediately I'll be like, I'm doing too good right now.
My life is peaceful, and you know why? Because I do that exact thing. I don't be texting people that bring drama. I don't talk to people. Hey. I don't invite it in. I'm not going to visit it. I'm not doing none of that, because I am in control of my mental health, my yes. wellness. And so when you become aware of that control you have, yes, you're like, it's okay. I can be concerned about you from a distance. I can be, because I have to make sure that I am well, that I am healthy, that I am balanced. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you get to the point where you want to cuss somebody out or put your hands on somebody, that's an issue with you. That's right. Not an issue with them. And so we have to honor and respect ourselves enough to be like, I'm not going to behave that way. Because I'm trying to keep balance in my life. And if I can't control myself around this person and I respect myself, then I have to distance myself from them. Now, if it's a relationship, kids, whatever, you might want to, I mean, I would try to figure out for myself. Let's say I had issues with one of my kids and, you know, I just feel like choking them every time I'm around them. I would have to look at what's going on. What's going on with me that... Mm. I have this anger or whatever's going on with me and my kid. And then I need to, do I want this relationship to be more than it is? And again, got to be willing to do the work.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole thing. Like, I don't think people in this society, we're used to fast food. And I mean, shoot.
Fast relationships.
Look, I'm going to say it. I buy CBD weed for my son. With schizophrenia, and I go to this place called Electric Lettuce. They got the drive up for you. So I mean, you can even drive up and get weed nowadays. So people are used to, I need a quick fix, I want this, I want it now. But you can't expect that trying to straighten out a relationship. It's like, what kind of relationship do I want with my kids? And you know, again, that's a whole nother thing. But I have adult kids, and so having adult relationships with my sons, they're my sons, but they're not my children. Hey. You know, they're not my children anymore. That's important. They're my sons.
Well, that's important that you highlighted that.
Yeah, so just working on relationships and spending the time and doing and putting in the work and admitting, I did some things as a parent, as a friend, as a, you know, girlfriend, whatever, that I need to work on. But that takes a lot. I mean, you got to be ready to
break yourself down.
Right. Break it down and do the work and repair yourself so you can repair relationships or be in good relationships with other people. Know what I'm saying?
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
I want to make sure that we try to support people out there that might be struggling. What do you suggest that someone does? Who do they contact? What do they do when they have...
So before that, even before that, of trying to get onto being able to recognize, like, do you have anything to be able to give people as far as being able to recognize maybe some conditions that people may be suffering, especially knowing that this stuff starts at 14, like it's going back that far? What are some of the things that people may be able to...
Some of the symptoms.
Yeah.
So I do have some warning signs of people who may be experiencing like some mental health issues or some depression or suicidal thoughts. And it's a list, so I know it's tough for people to follow it, but I'm just going to give it. Maybe something will stick out. You'd be like, oh, maybe I need to have a conversation with my child. Feeling sad or withdrawn for more than 2 weeks. Out of control, risk-taking behavior. Harming self or others. Sudden overwhelming fear for no reason. Sometimes physical discomfort, of course, seeing or hearing things that aren't real, drastic changes in mood and behavior, or their sleeping pattern, extreme difficulty concentrating or staying still, which is something we like. These kids in school, I need you to concentrate for 6 hours. I need you to be still. That's tough. That's tough for me. Mm-hmm. I need a nap every now and then. Intense worries about just like daily activities. Self-medicating, drugs and alcohol. You know, I know people who drink a lot. And when the time is right, I will ask them, where is that coming from? Because there's a reason that you're doing this. And again, they have to be
define a lot.
I mean, if you're drinking a lot to get through, basically, if you're drinking to get, oh yeah, with the red cups, if you're drinking to get through the day and that's the only way that you can deal with life and circumstances, then there's something deeper there. It's not like I'm just having a drink because I'm trying to, you know, trying to get a little buzz on. I'm trying to drown out somewhere else, then that's an issue.
But so celebration, not coping.
There you go. I like that. Trying to harm themselves. So some of those signs, I would be looking to have conversations with my young person. And then we got to think about too, some of that stuff is just behavioral. Mm-hmm. So you, again, parents, I don't want you guys, my daughter is having sleep issues, I need to take her to the, you know, the hospital. Mm-hmm. Some of that is just everyday life, but what you got to pay attention to is like the intensity of it, how long it lasts. If it's going on for weeks and weeks and weeks, I would be concerned. If it's a couple days, it may have just been something they needed to talk to somebody about. Okay. Another thing I want to say too before we're done, parents, don't be offended if your kid don't want to talk to you.
Hey.
You may not be the person that they need to have certain conversations with. Right. I've told my son, who is 17, you know, I hope that we have the relationship where he can tell me anything, but we've also acknowledged that I may not always be the appropriate person that you feel the most safe with sharing things. And I'm fine if you ever say I need to talk to a counselor or you need to talk to a different adult besides me. I'm fine with that. I need him to be as safe and healthy as he can be, and I don't need to be the one to always do it, you know. So the other thing is like the level of distress. If it's intensifying, if it's continuing, then I would start to worry about that. You know, so just changes in behavior. As parents, we know our kids and we can see when something changes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's easier to just say, oh, they're having a hard time at school, or, you know, your daddy didn't come and get you and that's why you tripping. Mm-hmm. That could be included in it, but there's something deeper there. We got to be willing to put in the time. We really got to be willing to put in the time. So before our time is up, so if you think that your child is suffering from a mental health condition or contemplating suicide, do something right away. There's no conversation you can have with your kid about suicide that's going to make them be like, oh, you know what? I wasn't thinking about that. But now that you brought it up, I'm thinking about it. So you're not going to put the thought of suicide in your young person's heads. Right. So being blunt and being honest about your concerns is very important. And if they do say that they are, you know, well, yeah, I've thought about it, you know, even I haven't thought about killing myself, but I feel like sometimes I don't want to be here. Then that's when, as a parent, you're like, okay, well, is there something that we can talk about? Do you feel comfortable talking to me? And you just ask direct questions, but you don't accuse. Well, I've done everything I can for you. Yeah. What do you have to be depressed about? You know, you got the perfect life, and you got you both parents in the house, and we make good money, and you got this. You can't do that because that's deflecting what you're feeling, your own inadequacy. Because if I gotta tell you what I'm doing, then something's wrong with where I'm at, and so I gotta figure that out. But
that's you making it about you too.
Exactly.
Getting off the subject of like where the support is
right
needed.
So I have a couple conversation starters. Just say something like, you know, sometimes you need to talk to an adult about your feelings. I'm here for you. You know, would you like to talk to me? Or would you like to talk to someone else? So you want to offer them that option. And when a young person is telling you about stuff that's going on with school, again, don't make it about what they did or what you would have done or what you did. Just say, okay, can you tell me more about what's happening and why you think this is happening? But I want you to know I'm here for you just to listen. Sometimes we just need people to listen. And then just saying, you know, I'm here to help you. Can you tell me what it is I can do right now to help you? Because I might not know. So if you're like, what is it that I can do for you right now? And if they're like, I don't know, just give me a hug, then just do that. Yeah. Don't look for more. Don't try to make it more. And then asking them again, do you feel like you want to talk to somebody else about your feelings? And if you think a child is in crisis, whether it's yours or anybody else's, and you think that they are about to take their life, never promise them that I'm not going to call anybody. Like, don't say, well, whatever you tell me is safe with me. I mean, part of that conversation is safe, but if you say, I'm going home right now and I'm going to take my life, I've been in that situation with a young person. I'm like, I can't promise you that I won't share that. I have to, because your safety is my first concern.
Right.
And so contacting the schools, they have good resources. Project Respond, you guys have to Google that. They can come out and do a wellness check. But really just kind of knowing the signs is the main thing.
Right.
Knowing how to recognize when your child's behavior changes. It's not just because, oh, they just moody, or they didn't like because I didn't buy them tennis shoes. It could be that, but you just got to be aware and be open that it could be something else.
Right.
Oh, and what not to say, you know, is don't make it about you.
Right.
Don't dismiss how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask questions like, well, are you okay? Well, obviously they're not.
They're not, you know.
So don't ask those yes, no questions. You want to ask questions that allow them the freedom and to be comfortable answering them and being themselves. And again, we might not be the person that they feel the most comfortable with. And that's okay. That's okay.
Right. I just that part of the conversation about talking to somebody, makes me go back to many of the conversations me and Karma had while she was here about, we can talk, but I understand there's certain things you're not going to bring to me.
Right.
And I had to have the conversation with her mom also. It's like, she tells me some things she doesn't tell. Yeah, that's how it works. And
right.
It's always going to work like
and
that.
And keep that
right?
confidence. I don't want you to tell me what she's saying.
Right.
She needs to have that to feel safe.
Yes.
You know, as parents, we want to create an environment where our kids feel safe being themselves.
Yes.
Whatever that means, being themselves. Our job is to guide and teach and provide, but at some point we have to respect that these folks are people.
Right.
They're individuals.
Right.
And they're not going to respond the way we would respond or the way we would want them to respond. And so that's hard for a lot of us because of how we was raised.
Exactly.
You know,
I think I take that into account where trying to have those type of conversations when I was young just was that was not happening.
Right.
And so making sure that wasn't a situation, you know, and I talked to her about her friends, understanding your support group and your friends. Sometimes it's just getting it out of you. They may not have all the advice or, you know, whatever that may help, but at least it's getting out.
Right.
Or if you need to go talk to one of the people at the school that this is, you know, what they do, they're trained in this, then cool. Just make sure it's getting out.
Yeah.
You make sure you get it out of you. And if it's something that you feel is above what you can articulate, write down what you can.
Right.
Have the idea,
right?
Have the idea of it so that you can go present that when you sat and thought with it, because it's something that's important.
Yeah, and kids don't always, I mean, again, I know adults who can't articulate their feelings, and so that's why they're yelling and screaming and breaking stuff, because I don't know how to put into words what I'm saying. I don't know how to communicate with you in a way that we're not going to be arguing.
Right.
So take this lamp.
Yeah, so here, you heard what I said.
underhand lamp.
take this plant.
Right, so just imagine a young person, 10, 9, there are people 8 years old committing suicide, having these feelings, not knowing how to articulate them, not feeling safe saying, I don't know how I'm feeling. And that's why counseling is important, and providing a safe place for young people to to be people, yes, and not our property is important.
So basically, I know we almost wrapping up here, but when I'm hearing everything you're saying, and you know, a lot of the big part of the process of how you think these problems can be solved, I feel like you're saying that trust is number one. Almost like they have to really, really trust you. If they don't trust you, you have a limited capacity to actually help them with anything.
Yes. And that's with anything, any business relationship, mm-hmm, you know, romantic relationship. Trust is important. Mm-hmm. And I don't think parents expect their children need to trust them, because right, I pay the bills, you eating, you got what you need. But trust, and, you know, it's one thing to parent, but it's another thing to be a good supportive parent. You know, right, we can be parenting, which is, okay, I'm doing what I'm
taking care of you.
I'm taking care of you physically, but am I acknowledging that you are a person in my charge right now? And at some point, you're going to be an adult making decisions based on the experiences that I contribute to.
Yes, yes.
Now, I'm not saying parents are to blame for everything, because there are other people that kids come into contact with, but we are the first ones.
Yes,
absolutely. Absolutely.
We are the first ones, and we have to be like, okay, what am I doing the best? You know, one of the things that I've learned in the last couple years is to always ask myself, am I living to my fullest potential? Mm. Sometimes the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because I'd like to take
that's a tough question too.
I but am I living to my fullest potential? And like I said, a lot of times that answer is no, and I have to be honest about that.
Right.
And even in the past, as a parent, was I really doing the best I could, or was I doing what worked for me at the time? Was I doing what was easy, what was convenient,
mm-hmm,
that I had the energy to do? And so, as parents, we struggle. And I know but to me, it's all mental health. Like
it all ties in
yeah, because we got to be stable and centered as parents if we expect to project that and teach that to our young folks. And we have to be able to admit that we have flaws and that we have things we have to work on.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Well, well, well. With that being said, we come to a close. The wonderful Giovanni Shern broke it down for the second time on Calculated Conversation. We are grateful.
I appreciate coming.
Is there real quick, where can people find you?
Upandover.net. You can contact me there. Of course, I'm on Facebook, Giovanni Shern. But yeah, you can email me through upandover.net.
All right. And that concludes the show. Calculated Conversation. Everything at Gmail, on Facebook, IG. The website is off the hook now. Cam put it together. Now you can hear all the shows through the website.
Did a little 1-2 on there.
He did it nice. So we appreciate you guys for listening. Until next week.
Facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it get funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what, I won't hesitate to diss one or two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well I'm dropping English, even if Yella makes it a cappella. I still express yo, I don't smoke weed or sex, cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself, do it, do. Spread yourself, do it, do. Ice Cube, it's not for the pop chart. So where should a brother like you start expressing yourself, my boy, and show you how your track?
What up?
Drop English right about now. Getting back to the PG, that's program.
program, and it's easy. Dre is back, new jacks are made hollow. Expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend. The records I spin again and again and again. Yo, you're on the other end. Watch your brother blend dope rhymes with no help. There's no fessing or guessing while I'm expressing myself. It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go, they know. Others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Though some musicians, cuz at home, they're scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show, they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to spread yourself.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Outside the Frame Migration on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Outside the Frame trains homeless and marginalized youth to be directors of their own films and lives. Their annual gala showcases a collection of short films by and about invisible communities in plain sight. Young Honduran trans women who walked to Oregon, houseless folks forced to migrate in their hometown, and much more. Again, that's Outside the Frame Migration on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thank you.